Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
How are we doing? Not really that good. Give me a little counseling, maybe. You guys all right? All right. Cool. Well, let me ask you this. How do you know where God wants you to go in life? How do you get direction from God? And especially, how do you know where exactly God wants you to serve and make a difference with your life? Like, how do you discover your unique purpose? I think in one way, we all have a kind of a common purpose. God created us to love him and to love people. But then again, we all have a unique purpose that God made me for. But how do you figure out what that is? We've been talking about that the last 2 weeks in this series we've been doing called GPS, where we've been kind of examining this internal navigational system that God's put in each of us. And so 2 weeks ago, we talked about your gifts, that God has given you some abilities and some talents. And if you really can examine yourself and discover those, it helps you understand what job you should have. And instead of just earning a paycheck, I can kind of figure out, man, there's maybe a place where I could work and really make a difference and feel fulfilled. And where do I serve in the church and the community based on my gifts? Last week, we talked about your P. Your passions. And so, you know, what is it that just, like, makes you angry? Like there's something in the world that you go, man, there shouldn't be kids who don't have a male role model. Or man, I can't believe that there are women who have to, you know, are hit by their husbands, or that there's homeless people. Is there something that just you say, man, I want to give my life to that? And you start to figure out your gifts and your passions, and you put those together, man, big things can happen. So today we're going to talk about your S, and it might surprise you a little bit. Like, I'm guessing your gifts and your personality, your passion, I mean, your G and your P, you're probably like, yeah, okay, maybe I've never thought about that, but that makes sense. But today we're going to talk about your S, and it might twist your brain just a bit, because your S is your suffering. Your suffering. In what ways have you suffered in life? What are some of the trials that you've been through? What are some of the most profound weaknesses that you see in yourself? Maybe things that you're hypercritical about, and if you could change one thing, it would be that one thing, your weaknesses. Today, I want to challenge you to kind of change from having a very human, which we are, but a very human view of your suffering, and to develop maybe a more godly or a more biblical view of our suffering, which is that maybe, just maybe, some of the suffering we've gone through, some of our weaknesses, are God kind of pointing us to where we can serve and make a difference and help others and make this world a better and more beautiful place. So today, I want to show you kind of the story of this guy named Paul in the Bible. If you have a Bible, you can turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 12. We'll put the verses on the screen in a minute for you. But let me tell you who this guy was. Paul was a guy who was not a Christian. In fact, not only that, he was like anti-Christian. But he has this kind of wild encounter with Jesus, and he becomes a Christian. Not only that, he becomes someone who's like very intensely a believer in Jesus and who wants to give his life to serving Jesus and doing something special for God in this world. And so that's who he is, and God actually inspires him to write several letters that end up books in our Bible, including this book of 2 Corinthians chapter 12. So let's look at what he writes in verses 7 through 10. He writes this. He says, "To keep me from becoming conceited, because of these surpassingly great revelations, there was given me a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me." So whatever this is, he's pretty intense about it. He's like, it's this messenger of Satan, okay? Verse 8, "Three times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me. But he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong." All right, so Paul's talking about what he calls his thorn, this troublesome irritant in his life. And if I were you, I'd say, what was the thorn? Like, what is this thing that's so, you know, disturbing to him? And the answer is We don't know. He doesn't tell us. But we can take some educated guesses of what it might have been. Like maybe this thorn was a physical challenge. It's possible that Paul was actually going blind. And we think that because in other letters, he refers to his failing eyesight. And so maybe that's the thing. He's like, man, I've got this physical thing that if I could just see better, I could serve God better. My life would be so much better. And maybe you can relate to having a physical challenge. Maybe your suffering in life, the weakness that kind of came to mind when I said that a minute ago, was a physical challenge. Maybe for you, it's being overweight. Or maybe it's chronic headaches that you cannot get rid of and doctors can't explain. Or maybe your physical challenge is depression. I don't know, but maybe whatever you're suffering, your weakness, maybe it, for you it's a physical challenge. Another possibility with Paul is that maybe it was a recurring temptation in his life. And there's some evidence for that as well. Paul writes this book called Romans in the Bible. And in Romans chapter 7, he talks about how there's some things that he does not want to do, but he keeps doing them. And there's other things he wants to do, but he can't seem to start doing them. And he says, whenever I want to do good, man, it's like evil is right there tempting me and pulling me away from what I want to be and what I want to do in life. And maybe you can relate to that. Maybe if you had to kind of name your suffering, your weakness in life, maybe it's this recurring temptation that you have. Maybe it has something to do with your thought life, these thoughts that you don't want in your head, but you don't know how to get rid of them. Maybe for you, it's anger. You just get like so angry about the stupidest things, and you can't seem to stop. Maybe you're tempted to gossip or lie. I don't know. Maybe your suffering is a recurring temptation. Another possibility with Paul is that maybe his thorn was like a nagging insecurity. For instance, maybe about the way he looks. He refers in some of his writing to the fact that he wasn't like, you know, this incredibly good-looking guy that impressed people. Or maybe it was his speaking ability. Maybe he wasn't nearly as polished and powerful of a speaker as he wanted to be. He refers to that. He says, I'm not the greatest speaker, and that's kind of my job. That's what I do, and I'm not that good at what I do. And so maybe it was kind of an insecurity he had that he wanted God to take away. And you might be able to relate to that. Maybe your weakness, your suffering, is this insecurity you've lived with your entire life. And maybe your insecurity has led you, maybe to manipulate people. Or maybe you kind of overcompensate for your insecurity, and it's led you to become a workaholic or an overachiever or a people pleaser because you're so insecure you'll just do anything to make other people like you. So we don't know what his was, and I don't know what yours is, but we do know that Paul begged God to take it away. He says, 3 times, I pleaded with God to take my weakness, my thorn, away from me. And probably a lot of us can relate. In fact, maybe you're thinking, 3 times? Like, I beg God 3 times a day, 33 times a day, 333 times a week. I beg God all the time with the thing that I don't want in my life to just get rid of it from my life. But Paul asked 3 times, but he says, no, that's a lot for me. I pleaded with God 3 times. And God, very clearly to Paul, says, no, I'm not going to take it away. Whatever it was, a temptation, physical problem, insecurity, whatever it was, he says, I'm not going to take it away. And the reason God says no is because we're told God knew that he could do more through Paul's weakness than he could through any human strength. And so he said, no, I'm not going to take it away. I want you weak in that area. And maybe you've been begging God for a long time. Whatever it is you struggle with, maybe for a long time you've been begging God. If you're a believer in God, maybe you're not there yet. But if you are, you've been begging God, God, would you just take this away? Would you get rid of that temptation? Would you just make me better physically? Whatever it is. And I don't think it's wrong to ask God. And it is possible that God will just take it away. But if you've been asking for a long time and you still haven't gotten the answer you want, I think perhaps you should consider the possibility that maybe God is saying no. No, just like he did with Paul. And maybe if God is saying no, rather than just getting bitter about it, maybe it's time to develop Paul's attitude about his thorn. So what was his attitude? Well, the first thing we see, and I want to look at these verses again, is that he delighted in his weakness. Let's look at a couple of those verses again. We'll put them up back up on the screen. He says, therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. The word delight in that passage, it means like to think well of or to embrace. And you might think, that's crazy. Like, that's stupid. Who thinks well of the problems they have in life? Right? Who embraces the things that you don't want in life? Well, Paul did. And I think God is calling us to. That if those weaknesses aren't going away, we should instead delight in those weaknesses. And you might say, that's just the craziest thing I've ever heard. Like, why? Why would I delight in my weaknesses? You know why? Because of this. Because we have a loving God who we want to be dependent on. Like, that's one of the goals in life. We live in this culture, especially in America, especially maybe for men, I don't know, where we're supposed to be independent and we pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps. But God says, no, you are my child and I love you. And I want to love on you and take care of you. And I want you to look to me. I want you to be needy like a child would be needy with their parent. And so I want you to be dependent on me. And so we delight in our weaknesses because we realize they point us to God. They drive us to God, right? Because those are things in our life that we say, I'm not in control. I've got this thing in my life I don't want. I can't get rid of it. And so I have to pray about it. It leads us to pray. And we realize if I'm ever going to have victory in this area of my life, it's got to be through God because I've been trying and I can't achieve it. And so we delight in our weaknesses because we realize, you know, we've got a loving God who cares about us. The other attitude we see with Paul, and I think we need to develop, is that we need to submit our area of weakness to God's power. Let's look at those verses again. And notice what he says. He says, therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses. And you say, but why? He says, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults and hardships and persecutions and difficulties. And then check this. He says, for when I am weak, then I am strong. And so what he says is, he says, listen, if I take those areas of weakness and rather than bemoaning them, if I kind of hand them over to God and I pray about them and I say, God, man, I've got these glaring weaknesses in my life. Would you do something with them? Instead of me just being bitter about this area of my life, would you help me to make this something in my life that allows me to make the world a better place? Right? A lot of people say, you know, your problems shouldn't make you bitter. They should make you better. I don't think God's goal for our life is for us to be selfish. You know, if my problems don't make me bitter, they make me better. That's nice. But I think what God really wants is for us to not be bitter, but to make the world better, to make the world more beautiful. We submit our area of weakness to God's power. And if you do that, if we do that, God can do wild and very cool things with our weakness. Let me show you an example from Paul's life. So we're going to flip back to the book called 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians and 2 Corinthians are both written to the church at Corinth, and the people who were in that church were the Corinthians. And do you guys remember I'm going to date myself a little bit. Do you remember the commercial years ago, Ricardo Montalban, and he would talk about the rich Corinthian leather? I don't think that's these guys, but I don't know. I have no idea. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verses 1 through 4. Listen to what Paul writes. He says, when I came to you, brothers, I did not come with eloquence. that's kind of ironic, isn't it, that I said eloquence wrong? All right, I did not come with eloquence or superior wisdom as I proclaimed to you the testimony about God. For I resolved to know nothing while I was with you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. I came to you in weakness and fear, and with much trembling. My message and my preaching were not with wise and persuasive words, but with a demonstration of the Spirit's power, so that your faith might not rest on men's wisdom, but on God's wisdom. And so he says, listen, I didn't come to you with this incredible strength. I came in weakness, but it allowed you to see God's strength in me, and it allowed some really cool things to happen. And so what we do is we surrender our area of weakness to God's power, and then it's wild what God can do with that. I'll tell you, I've seen this in my life. So I became a Christian about 20 years ago, and a little few years after that, I decided to go into ministry. And went to seminary and all that stuff. And if you had asked me back then, do you think you can do this? Like, do you think that you can be, you know, successful, whatever that means, in ministry? I honestly would have said, man, I don't know. And if you said, why? I would have said, I have some glaring weaknesses that I think could easily prevent me from doing anything significant ministry-wise. And if you had said, what are those, Vince? I would have said this. I would have said, well, number one, I am a serious introvert. And I know if all you've done is see me on stage, you might be like, come on, what are you talking about? You're like, blah, blah. But if you've met me out there, you're like, huh, he seems kind of shy. Yeah, bingo. And so it's just, I'm just like, it's just uneasy for me to meet new people. I don't know what to say. And so I'm thinking, I'm going to be a pastor who's like, oh no, new people. I can't, it doesn't work. And so I don't know how I can do this. Number two, I am type A. I am type double or triple A. Like, I got a lot of A's. And I kind of looked at ministry and I thought, man, there's no boundaries. Like, you don't, you know, shut your door at the office and then go home and it's all, I mean, it just keeps going. And I thought, there is a good chance I will work myself into the ground and I'll love it. Like, it won't be like, oh, my job. Like, I'd have fun working 22 hours a day and dying or losing my family because having them resent me. And so that's going to be a problem. And number three, I really thought would be the major issue probably, is my family background. Like, I met other people who were going into ministry and other pastors, and they grew up in Christian homes and had this great foundation. And, man, I grew up in a very non-Christian home. My father was a professional poker player here in Vegas, not a believer whatsoever. My mother's Jewish. She's really an atheist. She's a Jewish atheist, which is a great combo. My father was abusive. He was a jerk. I never went to church. And so I thought, I just don't have the foundation and the background to do this job. And so I had serious doubts about it. Now, fast forward 16 years. If you said to me, hey, Vince, the good that has come out of your ministry, whatever little bit of success you've had, what do you think it's been? Here's what I would honestly say. Number one, I have people tell me all the time, Vince, the thing I love about you is you're so personable. Like, on stage, you're like, I feel like I know you, and you really let me into your life, and you're like, you're just so personable. I'm like, have you met me off the stage? Because, like, I'll barely say anything to you, and I'll just start drifting away because I don't know what to say. And they're like, no, you're like really, man, you let us in. I'm like, all right, I don't know, that's weird, because that's definitely not me. I don't know what that is. Number two, I think my greatest strength in ministry is I've got really good boundaries. Like, I work really hard, but I also make a very high priority of my family. They know they come before anything else, and so somehow, I don't understand it, but I've been able to balance that really well. And third is my story. Like, I've had countless people over the years. I started a church 12 years ago in Virginia Beach, and at that church, and then even in the few months here, countless people say to me, man, the thing that kept me coming, like the first time I wasn't sure, but the thing that kept me coming was your story, that you didn't grow up in a Christian home, that you had a father who was abusive, that you didn't, you know, grow up knowing all this stuff, and you learned it along the way, and you're kind of helping me. And tons of people. Here's one example. Back at our church in Virginia Beach, there was this lady who came every week. She was probably early mid-20s, came every Sunday, but her husband would come two or three times a year. And every week she said, please come with me. And he's like, I really just don't want to. And so one Sunday he just happened to be there. And I happened to tell this story about a time when my father was just cruel to my mother and to me. And I did not know this at the time. But as they walked out that day, he turned to his wife and said, hey, I'll come every Sunday. And she was like, you'll come here every Sunday? And he said, yeah. And she said, why? What do you mean? And he said, I had no idea about Vince's father. I didn't know. We can relate to each other. I'll listen to him now. And he started coming every Sunday. And a few months later, he gave his life to Christ and he got baptized. And it's a really cool story. And it was because I have this messed up background that I thought was going to be my greatest problem in ministry. You see how it works? God takes our areas of weakness, and if we're willing to submit them to him, he can make those our greatest areas of strength. And it's not just me. We see this all throughout the Bible. If you start reading the Bible, you're going to see this theme come up over and over. Like, there's this guy in the Old Testament named Abraham. And Abraham had a weakness in life. He could not produce a child. I mean, he was now an old man, and he had spent years trying to produce a child and probably having some fun doing it. Probably. But I don't know. The Bible doesn't say that. I'm just assuming. But no child. And that's, you know, that's always sad. But back then, I mean, that was like you would be looked down on because you need to have kids, especially you need to have boys. But he couldn't. And so God comes to Abraham, and occasionally back then God would speak out loud to people. Doesn't really do that anymore, but he would speak out loud, and he talked to Abraham, and he said, Abraham. Everyone's like, whoa, yes, what's up? And God says, I have something for you. You are going to become the father of a nation. And Abraham must have been like, what you talking about, Willis? Have you looked at my life? The one thing I can't do is father anything. And it's going to be years before Viagra is invented. I'm an old man here. This isn't happening, God. And God was like, you are going to become the father of a nation. And Abraham became the father of a nation. What he's known for is kids. He had a nation, right? And it's like his area of weakness became his strength. Right? Another story, a lot of you have heard the story of Moses. And so God came to Moses, spoke out loud. He said, Moses. And God's like, yeah. And God tells Moses that he wants Moses to be his spokesperson, that he's going to speak to the Pharaoh, the king, for God. He's going to speak to the people for God. But there's a problem. If you've seen, like, the Moses movies, you might think that Moses' voice sounded kind of like Charlton Heston. But the Bible tells us that Moses stuttered. And so his voice was actually a lot more like Porky Pig. And so God comes to him and he says, you are going to be the spokesperson for God. I want you to go to Pharaoh and tell him, let my people go. And Moses must have been like, people go? No, you know, I can't do that. It's going to sound really lame coming from me when I stutter that to the king. And God's like, you're it. And Moses is like, why would you choose me? I can't do it. And God's like, that's why. Because you know you can't do it. And so the whole time you're going to be looking to me, relying on me, praying to me, and I will give you the strength to do it. And you'll be doing it with my strength rather than human strength. Moses does it. There's another guy, you probably don't know this story maybe, but his name is Gideon. And Gideon lived at a time when the Israelites, who are the people who believed in God, were at war. And when we meet Gideon, he is hiding in a wine vat, like the kind of thing you stomp grapes in. This is me stomping grapes right here. I wouldn't be good at that. And but Gideon is hiding in a wine vat because he doesn't want to get into the war. He's afraid. He's a coward. And God speaks out loud again to Gideon, and he says, hey, mighty warrior. And Gideon's like, who are you talking to? I'm hiding from the war. And God's like, I'm talking to you, and I have chosen you to lead my people into battle. And Gideon's like, is this some sort of a joke? Am I being punked? I am a coward. I am the one person hiding from the war. You want me to lead your people into battle? He says, yep, you're it. Come on, get the people together. So he gathers all the troops, and they have 32,000 men ready to fight. And the other side has thousands of men ready to fight. And God looks at that, and he says, Gideon, we have a problem. You have way too many men. We need to whittle this down a little bit because this isn't good. And so he has Gideon whittle the army down to 300 men. Not the movie, like this is real, happened before the movie. But 300 men who are going to fight against thousands. And God looks at that and he goes, all right, we've got Gideon the coward leading 300 men into battle against thousands. These are odds I can work with. And he does. Guess what happens? The Israelites rout their enemy, and God works through Gideon's weakness and makes it strength. In the New Testament, the guy Peter, Jesus chooses him to be one of his like specially chosen apprentices, his disciples that he's going to get ready to be leaders in the kingdom. And it's really interesting if you've ever thought about who Jesus chose and didn't choose, because Jesus did not choose who you'd think, like political leaders, religious scholars, great spokespeople, right? People who can really contribute to the mission. He chose like corrupt businessmen. He chose just ordinary, regular people like Peter, who was a fisherman. And if you read through Jesus' life, Peter's kind of in a lot of the stories, and he just messes up like crazy. I mean, he's doing dumb things, saying dumb things. I mean, he's an idiot. And the worst thing that happens is the night that Jesus needs him most, the night when Jesus is arrested and then put on trial and tortured and murdered, Peter deserts him. He runs away, and then he kind of sneaks back to see what's going on, and he has a chance to speak up for Jesus, but three times he denies even knowing him, and Jesus dies. And then 3 days later, Jesus raises from the dead, and who does he choose to give the keynote speech at the opening of his church and to become the leader of his church? Peter. If this was a movie, you'd walk out because the story was so dumb. You'd be like, this is ridiculous. The last guy you choose is him. But that's who Jesus chose. And Peter becomes this amazing leader who ends up being killed because he refuses to deny Jesus again. See, Peter's weakness became his strength because he submitted that weakness to God. And that's what God wants us to do as well. God works his way throughout Bible history, throughout history since then. In this room, that's the way he wants to work. Is he will guide you to use your suffering as a chance to really minister to other people, to make this world a better and more beautiful place if you submit your weakness to him. You know why he does this? I think it's because of this, because, you know, if God uses our strength, and by the way, he does do that too, and that's kind of your gifts. We talked about, you know, there's some things you're really good at, and God wants to use those. He uses those as well. But when he uses you in your strength, the danger is that you can get the credit for it, right? But when he uses you in your weakness, God tends to get the credit for it. Because here's something, and you guys may never have heard this before. Ready? Like, write this down. God is God, and you are not. Some of you are like, come on, have you met me? I'm pretty sure you got that wrong. But God is God, and you are not. And so God, as God, deserves to be glorified. Like people should think really well of him. They should think, he is amazing. He does amazing things. Me, not being God, people shouldn't think I'm that amazing. I'm not. And so if God uses me in my weakness, people go, that's got to be God. Right? If God makes an old man who can't have kids, that's got to be God. And so it happens. I think God does that so that he'll be glorified. And he wants to do it in your life as well. So let's get back to you and your weaknesses and your suffering, the trials that you've been through in life, the things maybe that for a long time you've been bitter about. Is it possible that what God wants to do is to take those areas of weakness and make them into your areas of strength? To use those sufferings you've been through as a part of your kind of navigational system to help reveal to you where it is you're supposed to serve in this church, in the community, where you're supposed to make the world a better place. And so maybe for you, I don't know, maybe you've been through a divorce and it hurt. And you're kind of embarrassed about it. And maybe it happened, you're young still. And so you're like, it's just awkward because most divorced people are older and I'm younger. And so I don't fit in with any of the categories. And so it's something that's really been like a struggle in your life. Maybe what God wants to do is have you submit that area of your life to him. And for him to really bring healing to your life and bring wisdom to your life of what exactly went wrong in my marriage. And how can I help other people who have been through that? And maybe God's plan is for you to end up leading a divorce recovery support group here at Verve. Maybe. Or maybe your deal is maybe you've suffered with an addiction. Or maybe depression. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe an eating disorder. And maybe you've overcome that with God's help. But still, like it's just kind of like you feel like it's like this black mark in your life. You know, I just wish I'd never had to go through that. Maybe what God wants to do is to use the fact that he brought you through that to help you minister to other people, to help other people learn the principles you learned and learn how to rely on God the way you did so that you can bring them through their addiction and their problem as well. Maybe the deal for you is that you haven't been able to have a child. And so maybe before when I said Abraham's thing, you kind of cringe a little bit and you're like, I don't even want to think about that because that's me. But maybe what God wants to do is take the energy that you have and the love that you have that you so want to give to like your kids and say, hey, for right now, why don't you give them to some kids in the children's ministry? Or why don't you partner up with a single mom who's struggling to raise her kids and to do it on her own? And why don't you kind of give a little bit of support to her and a little bit of love to her kids and help her in that way? maybe the thing that that you hate right now is that you're not married yet. And you just thought you would be by now. And you've been praying, God, send me Mr. Right, send me Mrs. Right. Then you lowered your standards, send me Mr. Right now. Send me Mrs. Right now, I'll take anybody. And God still hasn't done it. And you're like, why, God? And maybe instead of just being bitter about it, maybe what you need to say is, you know what, God? I'm just going to appreciate the fact that this gives me a lot of flexibility and a lot of time that married people don't have, and so I can serve you in a greater way than married people can. I have more focus and more time and more energy to give to you, and so I'm going to look at that as a really cool thing in my life. See how it works? What God wants to do is he wants to take your area of suffering, and rather than you just being bitter about it all your life, he wants you to submit it to him so that it can become something through which you make the world a better and more beautiful place. And how cool is that? Right? Seriously? Like, how cool is that? That the bad stuff we go through, the crap we go through in life, what if that can become some things that we really appreciate and delight in and say, man, that is one of the best things that ever happened to me. I mean, it was horrible. Yes, it was horrible. But man, what's come out of that has been really amazing. It's been a way that I've been able to make people feel better. People get to the places where they need to get in life. God has used the bad things I've gone through in a really cool way. He's redeemed those things. How cool of an idea is that? And how cool is it that we have a God that wants to do that in our life? Let me give you one more example of this. So I started a church however 12 years ago in Virginia Beach, and a couple years into it, it was April 15th, 2001. I got a phone call 1:30 in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm asleep, and I look at the phone, and the caller ID thing says Rich Merritt, guy in my church, and so I said, hello, and it was Rich Merritt, but his voice was different. Like, it was just like, Rich? And I will never forget what he said. He said, Vince, Megan's gone. I said, what? And he said, Megan's gone, she's dead. Megan was Rich and his wife Karen's 16-year-old daughter. And it turns out that she had died in a car accident that night. And he called me. I went straight over to his house. I spent the night with his family, spent most of the next couple of days with his family, did a funeral. And I will tell you this, at that point in my life, I'd never seen anyone in so much pain. You know, you talk about S, you talk about suffering. It was suffering. I mean, that night, it was insufferable. It was horrible. And Rich and Karen, I helped them a little. And they went to a counselor in our church, and he helped them a little more than I did. But mostly, and they really loved God, and they believed in Jesus. And so the whole time, I'm not saying it was easy. It was far from that. But instead of letting them get bitter against God and saying, God, why would you do this? They just decided to cling to God. And they said, God, you know, we know you didn't cause this, and we're thankful that we have you, you know, to get us through this. And so it was difficult, but God got them through it, and painful. So what happens is, 6 months later, 7 months later, we had a 10-year-old boy in our church named David who was attacked by and killed by a shark in the ocean, and unbelievable. And who were the first people, when we found out that it happened, who were the first people at David's parents' house, Rich and Karen? Who were the people who sat right next to them at their son's funeral, Rich and Karen? Who were the people who met with them weekly to kind of counsel them and get them through their grief? Rich and Karen. About a year later, we had a lady named Chandra, and Chandra's recent ex-husband OD'd on heroin, and she was just destroyed by it. And who said, hey, we want to be the ones to help her, and to start meeting with her and praying for her and talking to her? Rich and Karen. A couple years later, we had a lady named Lisa, and she had a baby who lived for about 2 hours and then died. First ones at the hospital, Rich and Karen. Meet with her all the time, Rich and Karen. About a year after that, we had a couple, Tony and Stacy, and they had a baby who lived for 1 month and then died. First ones to the hospital, Rich and Karen. Rich had actually decided in those years to go into ministry, and he was working for the Navy, but he was going to seminary at the same time, became a leader in our church, and Tony and Stacy's baby's funeral was the first funeral that Rich did. Rich and Karen moved last year to Philadelphia, about the same time we moved here, to start a church in Philadelphia. And one of the first people they met, one of the first people to join their church, was a lady named Dina, whose premature baby had just died. And Rich and Karen said, "We understand." And they walked with her through it and have helped her in incredible ways. See how it works? God takes our suffering. God took Rich and Karen's suffering. Are they glad that it happened? Of course not. Was it horribly painful? Absolutely. But has it been an incredible thing in their lives? It has. And they've been able to do so much good in this world because of what they went through and because they submitted it to God and said, "God, if you can use this in our life, use this in our life." So here's what we're going to do. We've been doing this at the end of each week of this series. We're going to give you a minute or two, and you got a card on your way in, and there's two sections of that card, and we're going to ask you to very prayerfully fill out that card. And the top section is for firsters. And so what it has is a kind of a list of volunteer opportunities that we have here at Verve, because we've been talking about in this series, God wants us to serve everywhere. He wants you to be a servant at home, at your job, in your neighborhood, but he definitely wants you to serve here at your church. I mean, that's very clear in the Bible. And so what we do is kind of a cool thing we call first serves, which means when you sign up to serve, you're not signing up for a year or a lifetime. You're signing up to try serving one time. And it's kind of like you're kicking the tires on that serving position. If you love it, cool, we'll sign you up to serve for a couple months or a year or whatever. If you go, "Wow, I tried it and not for me, no," then we'll say, "All right, you're done. Well, let's sign you up for another first serve and just kind of let you test out a few things until you find the one that you really love." And so if you haven't yet, if you'd sign up for a first serve or two, that would be fantastic. On the bottom, there's an area where, and you may not feel comfortable doing this, that's fine, don't. But if you feel comfortable, there's an area where you could put down maybe one or two areas that you've suffered in life. If hearing this has kind of brought something to mind, if you're like, "I've gotten through an addiction. I had somebody I loved died. I've been through a divorce." Whatever it is, if you go, "Huh, I've never looked at it this way," if you would write that down, what we'll do is we may call you, we may not, we may wait a while, and you might get a call in 6 months. We may say, "Hey, we kept your card, and remember how you said this? Well, right now we have somebody who could talk to you," or whatever. But if you think maybe there's a way God could use it, or I have no idea how God could use it, but if he'd want to, that would be really cool. If you'd write that down, we'll kind of keep that on file and know, and maybe someday we'll contact you. Does that make sense? So we're going to give you a minute or two, and we really want you to feel like this is your moment, right? A lot of us, as we've been talking about in this series, the problem is we're spectators. You know, we just kind of watch life go by. We watch cool things happen at church, and it's all very cool. But God wants more than that for you. God wants you involved. Like God wants you in. God wants you to make a difference in this world. And so I hope that you'll have this be kind of like a really inspirational, moving, like, "Yes, God, I am taking a step. I'm drawing a line, and I'm stepping over apathy, and I'm going to start giving my life to something bigger than myself." And so we're going to give you a minute or two to do that, and then I'll come back up and end the service. You guys ready? Here you go.